Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. In 2003, a new department began appearing in EQMM. Called Passport to Crime, its purpose is to bring readers translations of the best work being done in the mystery and crime field from around the world. In the years since its inception, stories from more than a dozen different countries have appeared in Passport to Crime. In this episode in our podcast series, we bring you a translation of a story by Belgium's Bob van Leerhoven. Bob is a journalist and crime writer whose novel Baudelaire's Revenge won the Hercule Poirot Prize for Best Suspense Novel in Flemish in 2007. Last year, an English translation of the book was published by Pegasus Books. The translator of the story featured in this podcast is also its reader, Josh Pachter. Josh's translations and his own fiction often appear in EQMM. Here he is with Checkmate Inchin Boat by Bob van Leerhoven.
A man and a woman can be evil by nature, yet still believe in a love suffused with trust and chivalry. It works out that way more often than you'd think. It's a law of nature that villainy longs for purity. Marina, mi corazón, what should I do? Wait for you or run for Chile? Trust in the love you promised me, or decide that you were only using me? Has this become a chess game between us, Marina? And if it has, whose move is it? I've registered at the El Presidente Hotel in Chimbote, not at La Canción, as we'd agreed. This is what they call waiting to see which way the wind blows. Fate will decide whether or not you'll find me in this paradise for cockroaches on the Peruvian coast. I had a good reason for not checking into the hotel we'd agreed on. After the long drive across the desert from Lima, I pulled into Chimbote, exhausted. And what the hell did I see parked in front of La Canción's entrance? Two police cars. Their side panels were gray with desert sand, their windshields filthy. Coincidence? Those cars had come a long way, same as me. I peered through the hotel's plate glass window. Two uniformed cops stood at the reception desk. They were talking with the desk clerk. They looked like twins in their matching reflective sunglasses. I continued up the street. You don't know this yet, Marina, but with my beard gone and my hair trimmed short, I look quite different, more Indian, like my dad. My altered appearance has one disadvantage. I no longer resemble the photo in my Belgian passport. That could cause problems when it comes time to cross the border into Chile. It's not easy being a jewel thief, eh, Marina? You've got so much to watch out for. As I walked through the dusty streets of Chimbote, I knew I had to watch out for Fernandez and Luis, who might have followed me from Lima or had me followed. I focused my gaze straight ahead of me, though, like a man on a mission. A turista would attract too much attention. The local granujas calleros would ambush an innocent abroad and clean him out before he could cry for help. So watch out, Willie. Not to mention the possibility that every truck driver I'd seen in my rearview mirror all the way from Lima to Chimbote might have been one of Fernandez and Luis's henchmen. That's why I stopped at one of the roadside cafes where the drivers take a time out for a quick line of coke to keep themselves awake, and trimmed my hair and cut off my beard. I abandoned my rental car there and thumbed a ride the rest of the way. It would be ironic if the taciturn trucker who brought me to Chimbote was himself an accomplice of Fernandez and Luis, but I calculated that as less of a risk than sticking with my rental. Anyway, I did what I could, and here I am, roaming the streets of Chimbote, thinking and thinking and thinking. High above the fishermen's smokehouses, ospreys and vultures dance across the sky. I make a decision. Tomorrow I'll hang unobtrusively around La Canción and watch for you. Meanwhile, I'll book a flight that'll take us to the border. Us, or just me. That all depends on you, Marina. Am I just another pawn in this game we're playing? Or am I indeed your king? The El Presidente is close to the fishmeal factories. At night, the red glow from the factories illuminates the desert behind the town. The sight reminds me of the gates of hell, as my father described them to me when I was a boy. Sailors love telling tall tales, and my dad was no exception. The man could lie so convincingly, he believed his own stories. He was a Quechua Indian from Chile, and Indians don't believe in reality. To them, the world is a misty forest, concealing many secret chambers. In 1973, when I was 12, my father told me he was going to spend 6 months working for his brother, who owned a tin mine in Chile. He would be a rich man when he returned to Belgium. My last image of him, the hull of a ship as tall as a church spire, Dad high above me, looking no bigger than an ant, leaning against the railing, waving at us, my right hand clasped tightly in the hand of my silent mother, who did not wave back. Because it was 30 years ago, I can't remember his face, but I remember his voice. I still hear it when I'm in my cups. Memories are little slivers of the soul. That photo he showed me shortly before he left for Chile is still a part of me. Dad was sitting at the kitchen table in our gloomy flat in Antwerp. I perched beside him, doing my math homework. He was looking for something in his wallet, and the picture slipped out and fell to the ground. Happy to help him, I snapped it up. The faded sepia print showed a woman with a small face and expressive eyes. In my youthful imagination, she looked like a statue of an Indian goddess. Her fine features seemed carved out of yellow ivory. She wasn't smiling, yet she didn't seem somber either. Dad snatched the photo from my hands. I asked who the lady was. He looked down at her and gently rubbed his thumb across her face before he returned the bit of old paper to his wallet. "Who is that, Pa?" I insisted. "Mi hermana, son, my sister. Now make sure you get those numbers right so you don't wind up a dock worker like your old man." A Quechua's lies can become other people's lives. That's why my father lived on in the stories told by my mother, who was born in Brussels but wound up in Antwerp during the Second World War. Even after he abandoned her, he remained her favorite redskin. During the war, he too had found himself transplanted to Antwerp when his captain, afraid of the threat of an attack by German U-boats, had given up trying to deliver a shipload of cargo to Norway. When I was 16, my mother finally told me, her eyes averted, that there was no uncle with a tin mine in Chile, and never had been. Before my father wound up in Antwerp, he was already married back in South America, and he deserted us to go back to his first wife, the bastard. That was the first time I ever heard her use that kind of language. She soon relented, though, and my father resumed his previous role in her stories, a charming man, a wonderful dancer. "He could never sleep with the windows closed," she sighed. "It was sad that he died at such an early age." I can't sleep with the windows closed either. That's why, last night, the fish smell soaked into my skin. When I looked at myself in the mirror this morning, I had the eyes of a dead swordfish. Even a dead swordfish, my father once told me, looks invincible. Will today be the day you get here, Marina? It's a 12-hour drive over pitted desert roads, not to mention the sandstorms and the trucks that rocket towards you and swerve out of your path at the last second like drugged mastodons. The drivers smoke native herbs and wear the expressions of invincible swordfish. I've been feeling that way myself since I pulled off my robbery back in Lima. Only you have the power to defeat me, Marina. I really have to leave for Chile today, but I can't, even though I don't trust you. The loot is safely hidden, yet my heart pounds so loudly it feels like it's about to burst free of my body. I hear its echo all around me. I need you, you. That's what my memories of your face do to me. Your face carved from yellow ivory. Today, I bought a straw hat to protect me from the sun. The long hours I spent outside La Canción yesterday, watching the reception desk through the plate glass window, boiled me like an egg. I got drunk on sunshine. The door to La Canción is a portal to a whole other world. If I step through that portal, I'll stick out like a sore thumb. Outside, in the street, though, I blend right in. I've taken on the listless appearance of the citizens of Chimbote. They walk as if they haven't yet regained their land legs after a long sea voyage. If you don't arrive today, Marina, I'm off. I worry about you. Would Luis and Fernandez actually hurt you, as they threatened? I don't know. But despite my mistrust, I still long for you. My fear grows by the hour. By now, it's almost as massive as my love, which cartwheels across the sky like the ospreys, like the vultures. I lie in my rancid hotel bed, sweating. The windows are open, the curtains closed. My chessboard lies beside me, the pieces scattered. Outside, the colors leapfrog against the clouds, far above the weathered buildings blackened by industrial pollutants. The smell of fish makes me sleepy. You didn't turn up today. My thoughts are shriveled by sun and booze. If you're not here by noon tomorrow, then it's my move. Today, I had a local photographer take some new passport pictures. He had an old-style flash, and the photos turned out grayish, which is exactly what I wanted anyway. I replaced the picture on my press pass. That took a steady hand. Of course, a sound technician's hands are well-trained. Even a sound technician who's been drinking more than he should. If anyone says anything about the photo in my passport at the Chilean border, I will humbly acknowledge that it needs to be updated. But, Señor, look, here's my Belgian press pass, too, and that picture looks just like me, doesn't it? My boom microphone and the sound equipment will placate the immigration authorities. Obviously, I'm a television sound tech sent by the Belgian VRT network first to Peru and then to Chile on assignment. My Chilean accent, my father's legacy, will further convince them. These last days, my father seems to have blossomed within me, as if my meeting Marina awakened him from his long sleep in the prison of my soul. Only here and now have I remembered how he used to call me his Inca boy, so proud he was of his ancestors. I left my Belgian half behind in the salsa tents of Antwerp, where today immigrants from South America whisper amongst themselves, Willie never said no to a mojito. In fact, he never said much of anything to anyone, but ay, could that man dance. Pity he was such a perdido. By now, he's probably drunk himself to death. Back in Lima, the rest of the crew must be frantically calling the VRT to report my disappearance. I'll make the evening news. In the chaotic capital city of Peru, where human life is cheap, the sound man for a VRT camera crew has gone missing. Or will someone already have connected the dots and recognized that my absence must have something to do with the theft of the diamonds? That would explain those two police cars. But how could they have known to look for me in Chimbote unless you, mi corazón, have betrayed me? I can't wait any longer. If only I knew which piece you are, Marina, my white queen or the black one. When a man is in love, he begins to dream of heroic deeds. Not that that's easy in the El Presidente. In the room next door, the same dance number has been playing for hours. La puta que yo conozco no es de la China ni del Japón, porque la puta viene del Ponce, viene del barrio de San Antón. Are you una puta, Marina? Nothing but a common whore, like Fernandez and Luis said? That would make me the village idiot, a fool who promise you whatever your heart desires. A sound engineer lives in the space between his headphones and the voices of other people. His ear is sensitive to the inner static we all have to endure. A heart that hears voices is easy to steal. I was like my microphone. I received but could not send. You were the sender, Marina. The first time I saw you, in the kitchen of Eduardo Barbosa and Sylvia Stern's estate, it was as if even your shadow radiated a dazzling heat. You looked eerily like that photo of my father's sister, which for reasons only the subconscious knows is etched so sharply in my memory. I'd been drinking, so I was probably radiating my own heat. The other members of the crew had no idea. Over the years, I've learned to keep my alcoholism hidden. Even badly hungover, I can still get the job done. Eveline, our archaeologist, was busy tagging the best items in the Barbosa family's legendary art and precious stone collection, famed as one of the most valuable in South America. You'd been working in their kitchen for 3 years. You'd grown accustomed to the top-of-the-line cars, the swimming pools, the private guards, the security cameras, the Dobermans. And you knew everything there was to know about the room in which the gems were displayed under watchful electronic eyes. Eduardo Barbosa, in his 60s and easy to look at, had granted the VRT permission to film on the premises for 5 days. The Peruvian arms dealer had extended every courtesy to the Belgian television crew, proud as he was of his collection of art and diamonds. From that very first moment, Marina, you were like a loaded revolver pressed tight against my temple. As we chatted, your energy was a flashpoint aimed straight at my heart. You asked about my Chilean accent, and in 15 minutes I told you the story of my life. Except for the booze, I held that back. You asked me to explain the purpose of the cultural documentary we were making. Now, looking back, I think you already knew that the alarms would be turned off while our crew was preparing to film. That was necessary. To set up the interviews with Eduardo Barbosa, we had to measure the lighting and the ambient sound. If the alarms were constantly going off, taking those measurements would be impossible. Maybe you already had an endgame in mind when, that second day, you offered to show me around Lima after hours. We agreed to meet in the lobby of my hotel. I was excited, I admit. Accustomed to long years of loneliness, though, I knew better than to take anything for granted. And yet, I wasn't surprised when, before long, you led me into a little place where rooms could be rented by the hour. The next morning, I turned up late for the crew's communal breakfast. Bart, the cameraman I played chess with in our free time, asked with a wink, "You lay awake all night trying to figure out how to counter my fianchetto, Willie?" I smiled. "My queen's stronger than your castles." A queen. That's what you'd become to me after only a single night. Lust drives caution out of a man's thoughts. Now I ask myself if the look in your eyes, a look I interpreted as passionate, might have been something else altogether. A man is easily satisfied, even more easily if he's a secret drunk. The same little place, the same room, the same smells, gestures, sighs, the same noose that lust drapes around a man's neck. You were murmuring, "Mi amor," when the door flew open and those two apes stormed into the room. They held their knives to my face, introduced themselves as Fernandez and Luis, and demanded through gnashing teeth to know what the hell I was doing with their sister. They didn't waste much time before they told me where this tragic comedy was leading. Either I could buy them off, or they'd beat the shit out of me. Curled up beneath a sweaty sheet, you begged them to leave me alone. "Puta," they screamed, shoving you aside. There was no way I could get my hands on the amount of money they demanded, I said. They would give me until morning, they told me. And if I ran, you, Marina, would pay the price of my cowardice. Your honor was now destroyed. You were less than un perro, and you would die like a worthless dog if I didn't come up with the cash. They left, dragging you with them and slamming the door behind them. When I left the hotel 15 minutes later, after guzzling the contents of my hip flask, you were waiting for me. Your brothers, you said, had gone off to celebrate their impending windfall, and in fear for your life, you'd slipped away and come back to find me. You had a plan that would get us all the money we needed, enough to pay off Fernandez and Luis, and enough more than that to give us a fresh start together. You pressed up against me in the middle of the street and held me as if you were afraid the wind would carry me away. You told me your plan. I was floating overhead on a cloud of rum, and down below I could see myself in the street with you, a beautiful woman, your arms around me while around us both a world that had never given me a chance slowly circled. You didn't need to bring your brothers into it, I said. You could have just asked me. The only thing I would have asked for in return is the illusion that you love me. You hid your surprise behind a flurry of kisses. Drunkards are usually passive, but sometimes they can be galvanized into action, usually by fear. Like me, today. It's time to go. You promised me you'd come to Chimbote as soon as the police were clear that you'd had nothing to do with the robbery. You'd tell your brothers that I was waiting for you at a hiding place in Lima. You'd pretend to be dismayed when it turned out I wasn't there. That granuja of a gringo. First the bastard stole my honor, and now he's taken off with the diamonds. We picked Chimbote because nobody who'd committed a robbery in Lima would be stupid enough to come here. He'd go to ground in a crowded city and get rid of the loot via the Germans, the world's best fences. But I know a guy in Santiago de Chile. He's old now, but he knows Santiago's underworld. He can help me to buy and sell, buy false passports and sell the diamonds. If I'd had a liter of common sense, I would have gotten on a plane and left Chimbote the same day I arrived. A drunk's common sense, however, rarely amounts to an entire liter, and a man in love has even less. But there are limits. I can't wait any longer. The two diamonds, with a combined value of, say, $500,000, are sitting right where I stashed them, in the little compartment in my boom that usually holds my spare batteries. I wrap them in cotton wool so that even if someone were to shake the boom, they wouldn't make a sound. A clever customs agent might unscrew the microphone's grill to make sure I hadn't hidden anything inside, but the boom is so reassuringly sturdy, it would take heavenly intervention for anyone to think to check it for hiding places. I'll need a drink before I get to Chilean customs. Alcohol calms me down. In fact, I could use a drink right now. I hoist my bottle and take a deep swallow. The rum goes down smoothly and does its job. As I turn away from the makeshift bar I've set up on the hotel dresser, my gaze falls on the chessboard on the night table beside the bed. The pieces dance blurrily before my eyes. I want to watch us dance, Marina, you and me, but which pieces should I be looking at? The white king and queen, or the black queen and the white pawn? If only I knew. I knew no fear when I picked the diamonds from their display case in the vinegary sunlight that filtered through the room's silken curtains. It was a perfect moment. The alarm system stayed off during the downtime between takes. You made the rounds of the crew with a tray of cold drinks. Our director played back a couple of shots on the monitor, and Eduardo and Silvia watched them with interest. On shooting days, we were all just one big happy family. I said I heard nature calling and faked a visit to the bathroom, slipped instead into the jewel room, and stashed two diamonds in the pocket of my jeans. There were electric locks on the display cases, but they were coupled to the alarm system, so also turned off. 20 minutes later, as we were ready to leave for the day, and I watched our host press the buttons to switch the alarms and locks back on, I felt a shiver run up my spine. I'd been asking myself if there might be some pressure-sensitive mechanism in the system that would be able to tell that there were now two fewer diamonds in one of the cases. Apparently not. I'd guessed that there wasn't such a safeguard in place. Even the big museums in the U.S. haven't gone that far yet. But I was still cringing when we got into our cars. It seemed to take hours to drive from the house to the high walls, topped with broken glass and dotted with security cameras every 10 meters, that surrounded the estate. I fully expected to see a jeep filled with armed guards come roaring after us. I sat there with my butt cheeks tightly clenched while the gate guard exchanged friendly quips with our driver. Finally, he swung the gate wide and we rolled out of the country club, as the common man in Lima scornfully calls the city's wealthy neighborhoods because of all the golf courses. The mood in the car was exuberant. We'd gotten some terrific footage, but the sweat on my back didn't dry until we reached the hotel. My bags were packed and ready. My rental car was gassed up and waiting for me in the hotel lot. Within 20 minutes of our arrival, I was off again, this time alone. I was heading for the impossible ninth rank, I thought, beyond what everyone else considered the far edge of the board. It's time for me to slip away to Chimbote's little airstrip. I can't wait any longer. Soon now, I'll be able to afford women more beautiful than you, Marina. I'll be able to buy my freedom from my addiction to you. Silk sheets instead of the yellow-stained mattress in our little Lima hotel. I'm standing by the window, lost in thought, when there's a knock at the door. I could gaze out this window forever. The rising sun paints the desert beyond the outskirts of the town with a blood-red glow. The desert lies there like the edge of the world. One step too far, and I'll fall off the edge. I take that step. And once you've taken that first step, the second one is automatic. Just like once you've downed that first shot, the second one is inevitable. Just like now and then, if I've had a few too many, like now, I hear the voice of my father's ghost, his words a prophecy I have to fulfill. That's Marina at the door, my Inca boy, the voice says. She is the love of your life, the woman you've always dreamed of. My father was such a liar. Just a minute, I call. I reach for my boom. I carry it into the bathroom, peer through the window at the hotel's parking lot, and see what's there to be seen. Checkmate. For a long time, I watch myself in the cracked mirror above the sink. Then I take our diamonds out of hiding and make my final move. When I open the door, you force a laugh, Marina, but you recover quickly. You glow with happiness and press yourself against me. I take you in my arms and I say that I knew you'd find me. Your body is warm and cold at the same time. You press your lips to my neck. I shiver. Still shivering, I follow you down the stairs with my suitcases. You talk a mile a minute, your voice echoing off the peeling walls. You paint our future as a cascade of cruise ship sunsets. You arrived in a dilapidated VW Beetle that's parked facing us. The trunk up front is open, as if the car is a desert animal, mouth wide, hungrily awaiting us. I toss in my luggage and slam the trunk shut. And then I see the face of the man behind the wheel and the knife that Fernandez balances casually in his hands. The sun dances on the blade, a riot of pastel colors that quickly melt into a yellowish hue. Gringo, Luis says from behind me. Screwing my sister was not the stupidest thing you've ever done. Come in here, with a desert full of consequences all around you. Now that was dumb. I'm only half listening to him. I watch Marina. Her lips move, but she stands perfectly still beside the car, as if her body is turned to stone. I hear my father's voice. Willie, a Quechua's lies can become other people's lives. The sunlight has faded from yellow to ochre to lilac. Soon it will disappear altogether. Fernandez and Luis have emptied out my suitcases, smashed my microphone and my boom, to smithereens, but of course there was nothing for them to find. Out here in the desert, where no one can hear my screams, they have used their knives, and they'll go right on using them to the bitter end, whether I answer their questions or not. Only my father's ghost and I know that I flushed the diamonds down the toilet back in my room when I saw that you'd won our game, Marina. I will remain silent, because without love, a mouth loses its ability to speak, and ghosts only share their secrets with those they love.
Checkmate in Chimbote is copyrighted by Bob van Leerhoven. The translation is copyrighted by Josh Pachter. Music for the podcast is by Adam Sundell and was obtained from the Community Audio section of the Internet Archive. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM. Thank you.